Greetings and Loloplakian ruminations, my retroactively portricious listeners. And welcome to this May 2018 Science News Update. I'm your host for this loosely plated science podcast segment, Jim Campanella. Wow, you guys really like the idiot scientist in the month shtick, don't you? I've gotten several of you writing to me, at least three of you, Mary Foreman, Paul Wellman, and Lior Saar. I'm sorry about the pronunciation, Lior. You mentioned the same story about the same poor schmuck to me in writing, a fellow by the name of Dr. Aaron Trawick. Trawick was the CEO of Ascendance Biomedical. He died last month at the age of 28. As I told you guys in my emails to you, I have no qualms about making fun of live nincompoops, but I try to respect the dead. If you listeners are curious about Trawick, then you can Google him. However, I'm not going to discuss him directly. Instead, I have some general things to say about these so-called body hacking and biohacking movements. First, our idiot of the month. I will not honor him by calling him a scientist. I'm sure those of you who live down under have heard of this particular nitwit, but for the rest of the listening audience, you're in for a treat. The story is in regard to an Australian biohacker whose name is, get this, Meow Ludo Disco Gamma Meow Meow. Yes, that's his legal name. And that, in itself, is a clue to his deep, deep mental instability. Mr. Meow Meow, like many commuters, forgot his transit card at home far too often and had to buy extra tickets for his commute. He got so annoyed, he had a chip from a transit pass implanted in his hand. The chip allowed him to tap on and off trains in Sydney with just a wave of his wrist. Whoa, like the dude made himself into a cyborg. Well, he did the magic trick for a while, that is, as a cyborg, until last August, when the transit officers handed him a fine for traveling without a valid ticket, despite still having $14.07 still left on his chip. This May, Mr. Meow Meow went to court on charges of traveling without a valid ticket and failing to produce a ticket for inspection. The battle, though, is likely far from over. At the heart of the case is not just whether one man was within the bounds of the law when he took apart a transit pass and implanted it in his hand, but whether governments have the authority to intervene in the technology we put into our bodies, and how laws will adjust to the rapid expansion of implanted technology. Meow Meow told the court, "I paid my fare. I sat down just like anyone else. Law isn't caught up with the technology. That's all this case was." Meow Meow happily brags he is a biohacker and a cyborg. Not only is he the first nut in Australia to implant electronics in his body, a la Tony Stark, he is also known for starting the country's first community biolab and running for federal election as a candidate from Australia's Science Party. As my daughter would say, OMG. A year ago, Meow Meow cut the chip out of his Opal transit pass. He encased it in a biocompatible plastic covering, which actually is kind of smart, and implanted it under his skin of his left hand. A few months after the transit inspectors slapped him with a fine, Transport for New South Wales cancelled his card. The Opal card terms of use spell out that users must not, quote, misuse, deface, alter, tamper with, or deliberately damage or destroy the Opal card, unquote. All Opal cards, the term says, are the property of Transport for New South Wales. Meow Meow pled guilty because he did, of course, alter his card, and he did not have a physical transit pass to show the inspection officers. In court, his attorney argued that his client's implant was simply ahead of the law and asked that a conviction not be recorded. A local court magistrate didn't buy that, saying people have to comply with the law as it stands. And they issued him a conviction and a fine of $220 in Australian dollars for breaching the Opal card's terms of use, and he was ordered to pay the legal fees. The magistrate did not issue a conviction for failing to produce a ticket for inspection. Meow Meow told the press, I respect the magistrate's decision, and it wasn't the outcome I would have liked. In another interview, Meow Meow said, I didn't try and game the system or swindle free rides. I just paid in a way that the legislature didn't anticipate. MasterCards and mobile phones can tap on. This indicates a direction technology is headed. I seriously believe that by the end of 2019, I will be able to travel with my implant. And here is where I start to get upset. There is a growing movement of people, like Mr. Meow Meow, interested in augmenting their bodies with technology, or worse, by injecting biological interventions that will supposedly benefit them in some ways. There was a body hacking conference, Body Hacks 2018, in February in Austin, Texas. Among the attendees was Aaron Trawick, who we mentioned earlier, and also DARPA Director of Biological Technologies, Dr. Justin Sanchez. Sanchez spent part of his time on the stage telling the hacking audience about the U.S. government plans to prevent global pandemics by turning the body into a bioreactor and to restore memory through technologies like brain-computer interfaces. However, Sanchez's main job was basically to warn those idiots that the government will no longer just sit back and let them do whatever they want in their garages. This was an audience of people who have decided that the formal drug research and approval process is too cumbersome and are using themselves as guinea pigs for increasingly more ambitious biology experiments. In short, they are idiots. Sanchez warned, we may be comfortable with the risk today, but are there risks we haven't considered? You need to think deeply. If you do have access to it, that doesn't mean you should use it. There's many levels of safety and security for the internet, for example, that we as a society are struggling with. We are in the early days of biological technologies. Let's think about how to do this in a responsible way now, so that as technology does mature, we're better prepared to use it in a way that will benefit society later. Unquote. Sanchez says he has concerns that if biohackers fail to think through all the consequences of their work, people could wind up getting hurt. Some of DARPA's newer programs, in fact, are intended to come up with ways to offset the consequences of biological research gone wrong, like the Safe Genes Program, which is exploring ways to reverse genetic engineering, among other things. DARPA was at the body hacking conference, he said, in hopes of spurring a dialogue about approaching biohacking safety. Now, frankly, I have a hate-hate relationship with the biohacking community. I have for years. There's a wonderful bit of dialogue in a story that I recently read that sums up my distaste quite nicely. It comes from the book The Magician King by Lev Grossman. These are brilliant books, by the way, that the TV show The Magicians is based on. The book, by the way, is far, far superior to the show in terms of tone, depth, characterization, and motivation. Anyway, let me set up this little excerpt for you. So Quentin Coldwater is a classically trained magician who graduated from a magical university called Breakbills. He spent a full 5 years there, and unlike Harry Potter, his studies were not interrupted by anyone who shall not be named for most of that time, unlike the TV show, from which I think no one has graduated yet. Quentin's friend, Julia, was rejected from the school after flunking the entrance exam and got her magical education on the streets in less than classical environments. In this excerpt, Quentin is being introduced for the first time to the idea that there are people out there in the world experimenting with magic who have not had a formal education in the subject. I'm sure you see where this is going. Quentin stopped on the threshold. Julia, Quentin said, tell me where we are. Haven't you guessed yet? She practically glittered with pleasure. She was relishing his discomfort. This is where I got my education. This is my Breakbills. It's the anti-Breakbills. These people do magic? They try. Please tell me you're joking, Julia. He took her arm, but she shook it off. He took it again and pulled her back down the stairs. I'm begging you, please, Julia.
I am not joking.
Julia's smile was wide and predatory. The trap had sprung and the prey was writhing in it. These people can't do magic, he said. They're not, there's no safeguards. They're not qualified. Who's even supervising them?
No one. They supervise each other.
He had to take a deep breath. This was wrong. Not morally wrong, just out of order. The idea that just anybody could mess around with magic. Well, for one thing, it was dangerous. That's not how it worked. And who were these people anyway? Magic was his. He and his friends were the magicians. These people were strangers. They were nobodies. Who told them they could do magic? As soon as Breakbills found out about this place, they'd shut it down with a damned vengeance. They'd send a SWAT team, a flying wedge with Dean Fogg at the head of it, to just get rid of them all. Okay, there you have it. Quentin was horrified at the so-called hedge witches and their safe houses. And so am I with the biohacking movement and their garages and biohacking spaces. With a classical education in science, you gain the right to experiment because you know the dangers of what you're working with. You are taught all the rules to keep yourself and others safe from your experiments. Who has taught these biohackers anything? Did they pay their dues? Did they spend years being taught the ground rules for mucking about in the realms of study in which humans have little business? And the simple answer is no. And I'm not the only one terrified by these bozos. Back in February, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, the FDA, moved to regulate the work done by these so-called rogue genetic engineers. They've now released a revised draft of their guidelines for regulating animals with intentionally altered genomic DNAs. Prepared by the FDA's Center for Veterinary Medicine, the guide covers animals that have been produced using any genome editing technologies or genetic engineering. The document reads as so, quote, "This guide addresses animals whose genomes have been intentionally altered using modern molecular technologies, which may include random or targeted DNA sequence changes, including nucleotide insertions, substitutions, deletions, or other technologies that introduce specific changes to the genome of the animal. This guidance applies to the intentionally altered genomic DNA in both the founder animal in which the initial alteration event occurred and the entire subsequent lineage of animals that contains the genomic alteration," unquote. This proposed regulation by the FDA would allow the biohackers to keep working in their makeshift labs, but it would require them to have their genetically modified products vetted by the FDA in the same way that the agency regulates any new drugs. The biohackers argue that the FDA is made up of stooges for the big corporations who want to make all the money and keep the breakthroughs for themselves. I argue that even if that was true, the biohackers have no right to be messing around in areas where they are not experts. And I do not believe that the FDA is going too far. If these hackers were making nuclear bombs in their garages, would the federal government stop them? Of course. Well, I see no difference here with these gene-hacking nincompoops. Yes, I am intractable on this. But Dr. Camp, these biohackers practice self-regulation, they say, with strong ethics and safety policies that make sure none of their experiments harm people or the environment. How can you be so mean, man? Well, I can be mean because I keep seeing examples of how these self-regulating ethical experimenters are brain-dead idiots. Here's another example. You may want to skip ahead 5 minutes if you're listening with children, because this is unfortunately kind of R-rated. Ben Greenfield is apparently a cult figure among fitness fanatics, a guru to those who devote themselves to meticulously monitoring their own biometric data for insight into their personal health. He has more than 130,000 fans that follow him online. Now he may become known for something entirely different, injecting himself with stem cells in the hopes of making his penis bigger. Greenfield said in an online interview, quote, "I want to take care of my body in the best way possible. Having fun, with using what science has given us to make the body better. Greenfield is something of a human science experiment. Who's willing to try almost anything in the name of, quote-unquote, getting gripped? He has subjected himself to platelet-rich plasma injections, stem cell injections in other parts of his body, sound wave therapy, all in search of bodily enhancement and better health. In November, Greenfield visited a company called U.S. Stem Cell. Now, this is a controversial clinic in Florida. And he did this to have his penis injected with his own stem cells. If the name of the clinic seems kind of familiar, that's because it's the same Florida clinic that last year unintentionally blinded 3 patients in a clinical trial of an unproven stem cell therapy. Now, that's horrifying. What's even worse is that these people aren't even supposed to be biohackers. They're just incompetent. In August 2017, the FDA sent U.S. Stem Cell and its chief scientific officer, Dr. Kristen Camella, a warning letter for, quote, marketing stem cell products without FDA approval and for significant deviations from current good marketing practice requirements, including some that could impact the sterility of their products, putting patients at risk, unquote. The U.S. Stem Cell Clinic, the FDA said, even tried to interfere with their investigation by denying agency employees access to facilities. Not good. In an online video, Greenfield and Dr. Camella explained how the procedure worked. Greenfield had U.S. Stem Cell isolate stem cells from his body's fat cells. Then, said Greenfield, those stem cells were injected into the, quote, meat of the tissue of the penis. Several early-stage studies have shown that stem cells show promise in treating erectile dysfunction in men. And in fact, one such study from 2016, in which adipose-derived stem cells were used to treat 17 men who suffered from erectile dysfunction from prostate cancer treatment, actually seemed to help them. The stem cells were injected into the base of their limited side effects, and 8 of the 17 were able to successfully get erections and have sex again after that. Now, our hero Greenfield, however, is seeking to enhance his manhood rather than to fix any medical problem. There is no evidence that this treatment, which can help erectile troubles, can actually enhance the penis at all. I mean, evidence it could enhance a man without any such issues is pretty much non-existent. Even if the procedure is actually safe, there is still a risk of complications, like infection, all for a procedure that has little chance of working. Greenfield, however, is deluded. He said online several days after the procedure that his penis has grown and that his erections were bigger. He insists the anatomical changes cannot be denied, although he has not actually taken out a ruler to measure, he says. He says, I can tell. Yeah. You know what? My hand would be bigger, too, after it was swollen and infected by a questionable injection. So, yeah, I'm sure you can tell. Greenfield does call himself a biohacker and is a big believer in stem cells. He's had them injected into his knee, his hips, to help him recover from injuries, he says, and that it was successful. He's also injected them into his arm as a performance enhancer at home. With the help of stem cells, he says, by the time he is 40 in a few years, he hopes to have attained the biological age of 25. He says, quote, of course there's a risk with these injections, but the payoff in terms of health is very big. You can't always wait for things to be thoroughly studied. You only live once, after all. Unquote. Yes, Mr. Greenfield, and you only die once as a hideously deformed abomination of nature as well. Sorry, after all that, we only have time for a couple of actual stories. Let's just get to them, okay? I should just stop with the biohacking stuff right now. Alright, first, Stephen Hawking's last research paper. What did genius Hawking say in his very last published paper? I won't pretend to understand this entirely, but it looks like Hawking's final research paper suggests that our universe may be one of many similar to our own, and that there is a mathematical limitation on how different parallel universes can be from this one. The study was submitted to the Journal of High Energy Physics 10 days before Hawking died. Of course, it was accepted immediately. I mean, I suspect that just having Hawking's name on a paper is pretty much an automatic acceptance in any journal, no matter what the topic is, I suspect also. Way back in the 1980s, Hawking, along with another scientist, Dr. James Hartle, developed an idea about the beginning of the universe. Their math resolved a difficulty with Einstein's theory that suggested that the universe began nearly 14 billion years ago, but said nothing about how it began. The Hartle-Hawking theory used a different idea called quantum mechanics to explain how the universe arose from nothing. Their idea tied up one loose end that created another, actually an infinite number of loose ends. And here's the problem. The Hartle-Hawking theory implied that the Big Bang would create not just one universe, but an endless number of them. Some universes, according to the Hartle-Hawking theory, would be very like our own, perhaps have Earth-like planets, societies, even individuals similar to the ones in our universe. Other universes would be subtly different, perhaps with Earth-like planets where the dinosaurs were not wiped out, and there would be universes completely unlike our own with no Earths, perhaps no stars and galaxies and different laws of physics. It sounds weird, but the equations in the theory make these scenarios theoretically possible. A crisis arises in the analysis, because if there are infinite types of universes with infinite variations in their laws of physics, then the theory can't predict what kind of universe we would find ourselves in. Hawking joined forces with Dr. Thomas Hertog to try to resolve the paradox. And Hawking's final paper is the fruit of 20 years of work with Hertog. It has solved the puzzle by drawing on a new mathematical technique developed to study string theory. And those techniques enable researchers to view physics theories in a different way. And the novel assessment of the Hartle-Hawking theory in this new paper has restored order to a hitherto chaotic multiverse. The new Hawking-Hertog assessment, as it's called, indicates that there could only be universes that have the same laws of physics as our own. The conjecture means that our universe is typical, and so observations we make from our viewpoint will be meaningful in developing our ideas of how other universes emerge. Mind-bending as these ideas are, they will be of real help to physicists as they develop a more complete theory of how the universe came into being. Hertog says, quote, "The laws of physics that we test in our labs did not exist forever. They crystallized after the Big Bang when the universe expanded and cooled. The kind of laws that emerge depend very much on the physical conditions at the Big Bang. One tantalizing implication of these findings is that they might help researchers detect the presence of other universes by studying the microwave radiation left over from the Big Bang, although I do not think it will ever be possible to hop from one universe to another." Unquote. Okay, last story of the night. I was disturbed by this because of personal experience. As I have previously discussed on the show, my dad has Alzheimer's. And what I have not discussed, because it seemed irrelevant, was that my dad is also, being Italian, is addicted to drinking espresso. Before he broke his hip a few months ago, and we had to place him in a care facility, my mother made sure that he was pretty much constantly supplied with that black espresso that he loved so much. Well, that may not have been the best thing for him. That may actually have made the condition worse, according to this new study. It's well known that memory problems are the hallmarks of Alzheimer's. However, this dementia is also characterized by psychiatric symptoms, which may be strongly present already in the first stages of the disorder. The symptoms include anxiety, apathy, depression, hallucinations, paranoia, late-day confusion. And these are manifested in different manners depending on the patient and are considered the strongest sources of distress for patients and caregivers, and I can certainly attest to that. Caffeine has recently been suggested as a strategy to prevent dementia, both in patients with Alzheimer's and in the normal aging processes as well. This is due to the action of blocking molecules, adenosine receptors, which may cause dysfunction and diseases in old age. However, there is some evidence that caffeine may have the exact opposite effect and actually make things worse. Dr. Raquel Beta-Corral of the Universitat Autonoma de Barcelona in Spain investigated normal aging mice and familial Alzheimer's models, and her studies were published last month in the journal Frontiers in Pharmacology. Beta-Corral says, quote, "The mice develop Alzheimer's disease in a very close manner to human patients, with early onset form of the disease. They not only exhibit the typical cognitive problems, but also a number of the psychiatric problems as well. This makes them a valuable model to address whether the benefits of caffeine will be able to compensate its putative negative effects." In the study, they simulated a long oral treatment with a very low dose of caffeine, about a third of a milligram per mil, which is equivalent to 3 cups of coffee a day for a human. And they did this to study the question, which is relevant for patients with Alzheimer's, but also for the aging population in general, that in people would take years to be solved because we would need to wait until patients were actually aging. So it's a bit of a problem actually doing this study with people. But just remember, you do the study in mice, and you're not always sure that it applies over to people. So we've had this discussion before. Anyway, the results indicate that caffeine alters the behavior of healthy mice and worsens the psychiatric symptoms of mice with Alzheimer's disease. Now, the researchers discovered significant effects in the majority of the study variables, and especially in relation to something called neophobia, which is a fear of everything new. Also anxiety-related behaviors and emotional behaviors and cognitive flexibility. In mice with Alzheimer's disease, the increase in neophobia and anxiety-related behaviors exacerbates their learning and memory and strongly influences their anxiety, but they got little benefit from the caffeine. Beta-Corral states, quote, "Our observations of adverse caffeine effects in an Alzheimer's disease model, together with previous clinical observations, suggest that an exacerbation of symptoms may partly interfere with the beneficial cognitive effects of caffeine. These results are relevant when coffee-derived new potential treatments for dementia are to be devised and tested." Unquote. In other words, if we are going to test the good things that coffee does, we better be aware of the bad ones first. Well, that's all for me for now. As always, take care. Don't inject anything into your nether regions. Don't try universe hopping, at least according to Hertog, it won't work. Watch that caffeine intake, and I hope I've inspired some of you. Until next time, this is Jim Campanella.